Welcome to the Angry Admins Podcast for February 13th, 2007, episode 15. Welcome back. This is the Angry Admins Podcast. My name is Joe Bibby.
And I'm Ryan Necessary.
Welcome back to the show. Today we're going to talk about some of the latest news in the past week, and we will also discuss some various options you have for backing up your important data in the workplace and at home. So to start off our new segment, we have a story about Apple. What a surprise. Steve Jobs this week released an open letter on their Apple.com site, basically responding to the negative publicity they've been getting from mostly Europe about how they need to open up the Fairplay DRM system to other companies so that it can be licensed. Mm-hmm. Basically, they've called iTunes Music Store illegal and are telling them they can't, which, whatever. Mm-hmm. But obviously, there's a lot of negativity there. So he wrote a letter that said that DRM doesn't work and everything should be released in the open, but the only reason he has DRM is because the recording industry won't let him release it without it. It's an interesting concept about having everything open, every song released just like in a format that can be used on any player. Mm-hmm. I'm fairly certain that a lot of people keep iPods because they, even if they only have 10 or 15 songs, mm-hmm. You're not going to want to just lose those. So right. Even if it's only a small number, which he claims it's only, I think he said 3% of the songs on iPods are purchased on the iTunes Music Store. Mm-hmm. Now that's a kind of a generalization because basically he took the number of songs sold, the number of iPods sold, and divided them.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people have replaced their iPods over the years, so that number's not quite right. But either way.
Well, it came across as kind of condescending to me because he spent significant time in the letter saying, oh, well, if it wasn't for us, you people wouldn't even have this music, and what we got at the time was unprecedented. We mm-hmm. got all four of the major music companies to agree to let us sell songs piecemeal instead of buy the album, and, you wouldn't have any of this, if we didn't do what we did, so you should be happy with what you've got.
Blah, blah, blah. I don't know if I would agree with you that he always does sound condescending. That's just Steve Jobs. He sounds condescending. I don't know if he necessarily meant, that you wouldn't have this without us. I think he's kind of frustrated because he's only doing what the music industry would let him. It's like they're requiring him. He states in there that within 4 days, if it's hacked, if Fairplay's hacked, he has to go and fix it within 4 days. So he doesn't want to license it because then he would have to try to fix it across this ridiculous amount of licensees.
Right.
So, that makes it a little harder. Now, Microsoft has been able to do it, and they've only been hacked once. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Apple DRM has been hacked 3 or 4 times, I think.
Yeah.
So
the other thing is, I don't know anything about the law or international law, but is there a separate iTunes store for Europe?
Yeah, each country pretty much has their own music store. Australia just recently got theirs.
Okay, so that's why they're able to say, this needs to be changed.
Right. Yeah.
Because otherwise, if it was the U.S. store, then why would they be able to tell him
exactly
what to do?
Yeah.
So, I got you.
So, but, for one thing, Dvorak says Jobs is right. So, end of story right there.
Yes, John C. Dvorak, the sage of the IT world.
Yeah. Yeah, so interesting story. We'll have a link on the show notes to the actual letter if you haven't read it yet. Give it a read, see what you think.
Yep.
So what else do we have, Ryan?
Okay, so this past week everybody's been talking about Wikipedia. Oh my gosh, Wikipedia is going to go down. We're going to lose Wikipedia. apparently there was a comment that was made by, I guess, one of the ladies that heads up Wikipedia. They're talking about in 3 or 4 months they're not going to be able to afford their bandwidth, and they need to seek further funding, or else Wikipedia might get shut down. This is coming from Florence DeVore, the chairwoman. There's no telling how much bandwidth these guys are using, and I'm sure it's very expensive.
Though it is mostly text.
And, well, that's true. But I guess the thing is, it feels to me like they're just kind of trying to scare the public into, hey, give us money or else we might go away, so Now, I do agree that Wikipedia is very valuable.
Sure.
I would say it is the probably the easily the most accessed, you know, info site on the net. You know, outside of like search engines and stuff like that, and just the raw volume of stuff that's there.
Right.
And it's not stuffy stuff. You know, it's like, wow, I really love this movie. I really love this, you know, anime. I really love this spark plug. I mean, you can go out there and find, you know, volumes of junk that you never even cared about the smallest little thing. So that's, it's like this hugely valuable thing on the net, contributed by users, very Web 2.0. But, you know, I don't know if they're exactly going to, they're in such a position right now that I don't understand how they could go under.
Yeah, I love Wikipedia. And honestly, I haven't really started using them until probably the last couple months. I mean, I always knew it was there. I would go there every once in a while. But, man, the last few months, I think, you know, a lot of it was from recording this podcast. I go research history of the software we talk about or, you know, several other things. But it seems like it wouldn't, I mean, how can they be in financial trouble? Mm-hmm. I just don't get, I mean, maybe they need to start, you know, getting some ads on there or something.
Well, the whole thing, too, was that after the story exploded that they might go away, then there was a follow-up story that basically said, well, people are kind of taking this out of context. And they said, well, we are going to be around. We do have people that are planning, you know, for our future and how to get things done. So, you know, who knows if it was just kind of a scare tactic for them or...
Could be they just needed some more attention. I mean, the only attention it seems like they received lately is colleges are not allowing anybody to use Wikipedia as a source anymore.
Right. Or when all the, during the political campaigns when they were editing each other's stuff for negative reasons.
Yeah, that stuff's funny to me, though. So. Yeah.
Well, the other thing, too, is that maybe they're going to go to an ad-supported model, and they're just kind of doing this to kind of soften the blow. Like,
could be.
Oh, wow, there's ads. Oh, well, I guess that's what they had to do to keep it going under.
Yeah,
you know, so we'll forgive them, I guess. Mm. What else we got, Joe?
So, finally, everybody knows that IE is a problem.
Right. Internet Exploder.
Yes, that's right. And... you know, Microsoft has known that's a problem, but they haven't ever wanted to admit it. You know, they keep releasing updates, but they're like, oh, yeah, I use the best browser on the market.
Mm-hmm.
But this is kind of ironic because we found this through our friends over at Daily Cup of Tech. But on an MSN site, there's a security story about how to be more secure on your computer and on the internet. And the number one thing, and this is on MSN's Microsoft funded site, says it's so the top thing was to stop using Internet Explorer, which to me, you know, it's just a happenstance because it was a PC Magazine story that made it on the MSN site. But I just love this kind of stuff when Microsoft just kind of gets it a little bit, just makes me laugh.
Right. Well, this also makes the point of the whole recanned content.
Yes, you know, exactly.
It's like, oh, well, let's just cut and paste. We need some content, and let's pull these PC Mag articles, and then suddenly, bam, negative publicity that you're promoting against
yourself. Yeah. It's good stuff. I mean, and it happens everywhere. I mean, any site you go to, you know, it seems like most of it is just from somewhere else. And probably, though, most of the people who go to MSN aren't going to be reading PC Mag, so it's...
Right.
I guess it's PC World. I'm sorry. Either way, it's a pretty funny story. Not a whole lot else to say about it other than haha.
Yeah, did you hear about the malware war thing mm-mm. happening recently?
So what's this all about?
Okay, so the Storm Trojan that was, you know, really big in Europe recently.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like this new, you know, virus Trojan kind of going around. Apparently the vector for this was instant messaging clients.
Okay.
So we're talking AOL Instant Messenger, Google Talk, Yahoo Messenger. What'll happen is this thing infects you, and then it pretends it's you inside the instant messenger and posts a link like, LOL, check this out.
Yeah,
And so the link's there. And so you hit that, and then that person hits the site, and now they have it.
Wow.
So, and it's very polymorphic. Like, it keeps changing. And and the thing, too, is that it's a distributed denial of service, you know.
Wow.
Okay. Trojan. So, and the thing can be, like, turned off and on. It has, like, its own sort of BitTorrent type thing where it communicates with itself, and that it's being used to attack.
It's Skynet.
It is, and we're losing the battle. But so it's been used so far to attack like all kinds of anti-spam sites.
Okay.
But that's been going on for a while.
Sure. Yeah.
So the interesting thing is not only that, but it's also attacking other malware sites.
Really?
So it's like the malware Trojan Riders competition now is becoming
like
the target.
Malware Civil War.
It is. It is. We can only hope that they all lose.
But, wow, that's pretty cool, though. I mean, it just shows you how things are progressing, and you know, you're really seeing more and more intelligent virus and spam design and malware design. Mm-hmm. Because you know, I remember back when it was just like you just had to run a program, and mm-hmm. now it's like, I mean, it's going through your own instant messaging client and it's stealthing, and it shows that people are smarter, but everybody else is keeping up and keeping right. ahead of the game.
And the thing too is that, you know, spam and spyware is all about money.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't want it's like drug gangs. I mean, they want to eliminate the competition.
Yeah.
Know? So I don't know. That was kind of weird.
Yeah. I was amazed when I found out how much some of these spammers make. I mean, because I get spam and it instantly gets deleted. Most of it goes directly to my spam filter, but they're making millions of dollars off of
junk.
Millions of morons, apparently, because who clicks on this stuff? Yeah. I mean, it's
if they never got clicks, it wouldn't be around.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but I mean, the crappy part is that, I mean, they have to like spam out a million messages to get 50 people to buy something.
Yeah, but it costs them almost nothing. So, backing up your data has become a very important thing in this digital age. I mean, you know, we're getting our music online. We're starting to get movies and TV shows online. Everything's...
And none of those are cheap.
Yes, exactly. You don't want to lose it. So backing up your data has really become, especially in the last year or so, really important. And it's really kind of getting thrown onto the end user most of the time on exactly what is going to go on there. But it's also, especially in the workplace, you know, people are bringing this stuff into work and you can, you know, hard drives are getting filled up with music, and that's going to get, if you're just backing up the entire drive, that's going to get backed up. So, you know, you need more advanced utilities and be able to filter some of that out.
Right.
So there's kind of been always been a little bit of a discussion between what's the best way to back up data?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many options out there, and there's kind of, in my mind, two ways to do this. You can have your user-controlled backup systems, and then you kind of have the IT or sysadmin-controlled, which is more of a central system. They both have positives and negatives. You know, the user-controlled, it's a lot cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Almost always, it's the cheapest option. Kind of leaves the responsibility up to the user, so in some ways that can be good because, you know, it's up to them. You know, they're, as Ryan likes to say, participating in their own success.
That's right.
So, but as many of you sysadmins out there know, you can't rely on the end user. And they're going to blame you when they can't get their data because you're the one in charge.
Right.
Especially in the workplace. You know, and if you're at home, if you're the tech expert, it's going to be your wife or your kids or your friends or your family. They're going to be like, man, I thought you helped me out here. So,
right.
So, you know, it's cheap. But it's just not really reliable. It's the easiest to set up, but you know, it just doesn't work very well, it seems like. So in my mind, the centralized management system, you know, kind of IT controlled, is really the way to go, where you have little clients that run on the workstations, and then you have a centralized management system that runs on a server that lets you control what gets backed up, the times. Everything is controlled from a central location so that you can easily see in the logs what's going on, who needs backups. If somebody calls you and is like, hey, I need this file backed up real quick, you know, you can just click, 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 you're done.
Right.
You can restore backups from that same location. So
yep.
To me, that seems like the best way to go, but we're going to present all the options so that you can kind of decide on your own what you want to do. There are also several different ways, types of things you can do to back up. And I think Ryan has a few ideas on that front.
Yeah, let's just talk about quickly the types of backups. So you can do a full backup, which basically just says copy everything. And this is just like a one-for-one, grab the entire folder, grab the entire drive, you know, grab the entire disk, you know, whatever, and
right.
put an entire copy of that somewhere else.
Kind of simple, but just works. Quick and dirty, right?
But it is big. Mm-hmm. You know, you're doing
yeah.
it all.
Yeah.
So next to that, you can have a differential backup. So the differential is basically all the files that have changed since the last full.
Okay.
So the thing about differentials is, like, if you do a full on a Friday, which is kind of a standard thing, you know, full backups on the weekend, if you start doing differentials, say, Monday through Thursday, those get bigger. because more files change during the week since the last. So that can get big. And then finally, you have the incremental backups, which is, you know, only the files which have changed since the like the last incremental.
Gotcha.
So in other words, if I'm doing differentials and I lose data in the middle of the week, I just need my full and my one differential, my latest differential. If I were to lose data in the middle of the week and I'm doing incremental backups, then I need my full and all the incrementals between then and now. So that takes longer. The nice thing about incrementals is they're very quick sometimes, because if your user don't change much, then bam, it's done, it's over with. So those are the three basic types. And then there's all kinds, you can look up online about the Tower of Hanoi and all kind of like tape rotation strategies. And there's like a whole mathematical science to like maximizing the number of tapes you have or disks or whatever. But beyond that, Joe, what types of media, I guess, basically gets used?
So there's there's really two main types. You know, it's kind of sorted down to this after so much time. There's your standard disk, which is what you see in your computer every day, your hard drive. You know, it's just a standard kind of disk format. And then there's tapes, which some people, you know, may not even know they're still around because you don't really see them on the end user anymore. These are only in corporations and people who need really reliable archives. So that's really what tapes are good for. They're a little slower and they cost a little more, but they're very reliable. And you can use robotic tape drives, which basically swap them out automatically for you and have a nice system going there. And they're also easy to replace because, you know, it's designed to just punch it in, punch it out, kind of like a cassette tape if you've never seen one.
Yeah, the latest, like, DLTs are up to, I think, 400 gig or something.
Yeah,
like
and they're really big. But they're all, you know, it's a sequential read. So, you know, if you need to restore, it's going to have to scan through that entire disk to get to the end to get the file you need.
And they're also like $60 to $80 a pop.
Yeah, they're not cheap. So, but they last a really long time.
Yeah, they can.
So, but disks, on the other hand, are good because they read and write very quickly. They're a lot cheaper, and there's been a lot of development in RAID technology. RAID 5 especially is what a lot of people use to make them a little more reliable over the long term. So if you have a disk failure, you can just swap a disk in, and it will rebuild itself so that you don't have to worry about that drive failing, which was a big problem with them for a long time.
Right. Well, the other thing, too, is to have, like, if you have a separate system, which is basically dedicated to backups, so you can have what I would say not really what I would call nearline backups. So you have, like, another server, which is, okay, we're just going to back up everything to disks on that machine over there.
Right.
So it's like, oh, no, I lost my report for this morning. It's like, okay, couple of clicks, you get over there, you find the file, you put it back, bam, it's done. So it's kind of a sort of a copied thing that's just on the network, ready to go at all times. You don't have to go digging through the file cabinet looking for the right tape or anything. So that can save you a lot of time.
And there's really several ways that this disk storage has kind of shown itself in the market, and this is kind of trickling down to consumers as well, because for a long time on consumer level you could only get, like, you know, you get your internal storage, and then you have your external USB or FireWire drives.
Right.
Well, now you're starting to see more of the NAS and SAN type things, you know, network attached storage and storage area networks, where mostly in the home it's the NAS, where it's just a device set up in a RAID or a couple disks that you just plug into the network and anybody can access.
Right. Kind of a home server.
Yeah, almost like a home server. Right. And then you're not really seeing the SANs at home yet, but I imagine that's coming, because basically all that's mostly just multiple network attached storage working together. So, but the other thing that's nice that I'm seeing now is the external serial ATA, which is so much faster. It's faster than FireWire, even the new FireWire 800, it's faster than that. I mean, it's like having an internal disk that you plug in on the outside, and that's...
Do you think it's catching on fast, though?
It's not. It seems like it's just starting to build momentum. I think because of the low-cost network attached storage devices, it's having a hard time catching on, but I think it's going to start pretty soon. What they really need is one that can do both this E-Serial ATA and network at the same time.
Right.
Which isn't on the market yet. So.
Yeah. My suspicion is that all the manufacturers that normally would be making these are making too much money off the USB-based ones.
Sure. So. Well, they've already got the chips. You know, they probably make those chips for pennies at a, you know, by the thousand. So
they're not going to want to change
exactly.
Fast.
So we're going to kind of split this backups up, this backup coverage up. This week we're just mostly going to talk about Windows backup solutions. And then next week we will get into a little more of the hardcore Linux, Unix backups for the people out there who really want to do it right. But to get things started, we're going to talk about one that probably everybody has, and that is the built-in Windows backup client.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably don't know it's there, and there's probably a good reason for that.
Right, because it's not spectacular.
Yes. I've used this a few times over the years and had limited success. I mean, it does what it says it's going to do, but it doesn't do it well. It doesn't do it gloriously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've heard of it failing, but...
Yeah, I came into a lab. I inherited a lab 5 or 6 years ago, and they had an old NT server, and yeah, I was kind of lazy, so I just used... Man, I tell you what, man, I just used the Windows backup, and I did the registry backups. You know, mm-hmm. you can do a registry dump, you know.
Right.
We used to do that a lot with NT4.0 because it was so important.
Yeah.
And between those two things, I was able to put everything back that they were lost, which luckily wasn't much, but... You know, it was kind of like that old, you know, Pinto that was rusting in your driveway.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, it gets me to work, but I don't really like to talk about it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. I'm surprised you're even admitting that you used it, man. That's good. That's bold.
I'm coming out.
That's bold. So, yeah, you know, it works. You can set up scheduled backups. You can do incremental and full scheduled. And really, that's about all there is to it.
Yeah.
But
it's wizard-based.
So since you used the one built in, did you find any other Windows clients that worked very well at all?
Well, in the past few years, and this really, I think this package kind of personifies most of the freeware Windows backup utilities out there. SyncBack is the software that I've used recently, and it's pretty good. It's as deep as you want it to be, or as simple as you want it to be. It does quite a bit. You can set files to exclude, files to include. You can do directories. You can do the only failing of this is it kind of relies on the Windows task scheduler, which a lot of them do. It's almost like all these free backup things, they just don't have their own scheduler built in. Now SyncBack does have a pro version that you can pay for, that I think does quite a bit more, but you know, if you're a home user or if you just need something quick at work to like mirror some data over to another box, then SyncBack is probably going to be able to get it done for you as long as you have access to like a map drive on a regular basis or something like that. But it is good. It's reliable. It does print out like a nice log of success, failure for all your backups. So it's a pretty good tool. I would recommend it.
One thing I noticed when I was looking at that software, because I hadn't really heard of it before you recommended it to me, but it looks like they have the ability to do actual like synchronization between two devices.
Right. So yeah, you can tell it, okay, I want to do backups, or I want to keep two locations the same. So. You know, if I delete, you know, report.txt on my local box, then the next time it does a backup, it's going to whack it off of your backup system too.
Right.
Or you can tell it, you know, don't blow away things. Just keep them out there, you know, for an unlimited amount of time. So you can control all of that.
One thing I think that I could see that being useful for in kind of an odd way, I think more and more people have a desktop and then they have a laptop that they carry around with them.
Right, exactly.
And syncing those two together easily, which was supposed to be built into Vista, but didn't make it into the final release, like many of the other things everybody liked about it.
Right.
I think it could be a pretty useful thing, especially being free. I mean, you can't complain. I don't know if I'd rely on it completely. You know, I'd check to make sure it put everything on there before I left to go give that $1 million presentation. But something like that would be nice instead of having to do it all manually.
Yeah, if you have a home network and, you know, you have a couple of kids' PCs and you want to, if you have one of these network-attached storage boxes or you have one kind of beefy machine that has nice big hard drives, you know, this would be a good tool to use to push email and iTunes from all of those things into one central location.
So those were kind of the two home user, non-centrally managed tools that we like.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of the big daddy of backup systems is Symantec Backup Exec. Now they're currently in version 11D, and this, you know, we're going from free to very, very expensive.
Right.
I mean, we're talking for about 50 users, we're talking about 12 grand.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not cheap. This is definitely for your corporate environment. You wouldn't buy this for home. This would be just a waste of your money unless you really want to learn how to use this. Which, if you're at that point, man.
Well, actually, it's the agents that make it expensive.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So for a few grand, you know, if you really want to throw your money away, feel free to donate it to ryan@angryadmins.com. No. But yeah, so it's really when you start to back up a lot of boxes that it gets expensive at the corporate level.
But when you get to that many, I mean, it ends up almost saving you money, because having one or two guys running around checking everybody's backups every day, that just wouldn't work. And both of us know that you just cannot rely on all those people to back up everything, and they're going to lose some data and they're going to be looking to you.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been testing this out for a while, and we really like it. You know, we both kind of used this before. Symantec just bought this recently, and they've really kind of polished it up in the last couple of years and really made it a nice product again.
Mm-hmm.
So to describe basically the general functionality of this, it uses, like we said, the client-server methodology, where you install remote agents on your clients and you have management software running on a server.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the nice thing is you have that server, but then you can install the management software on any other PC and log into that management server from anywhere. So, you know, similar to, you know, your firewall or your web server, several other things, you have this nice tool that you can use to control it, and you don't have to be sitting in front of the server at all times.
Right.
So that's a big plus. And through that utility, you have the ability to do remote agent installation. Now, this got me excited.
Yeah.
Because I don't even have to get up out of my chair, and I can install the entire software.
Right.
That's now, one problem we ran into is that the advanced open file option, which lets you copy files that are in use, that requires a reboot. So users might not be too happy with you if you install this and then they see the counting down 30 seconds from now, you're going to be rebooting and there's nothing you can do about it screen.
Face it, they deserve it. Yeah.
That's true, they do. They do. We got to keep them angry, you know.
That's right.
But it's really a robust software package. I mean, it allows for, you can have multiple robotic tape drives, takes hard disks. Mm-hmm. I mean, basically anything that you want to back up to, it lets you back up to. I mean, if you wanted to use floppy disks, you could do it.
Yeah, you can set, what was it? You can set like all the different storage arrays that are possible backup locations.
Right. Yeah, they call them media sets is what they're called.
Right.
And you can actually mix and match. I mean, you could have a robotic array mixed with your SAN, mixed with, mm-hmm. you know, a little thumb drive. And it'll just kind of span between all those smartly. You can even set the file size. So say you don't want to have a gigantic 100 gig
chunk,
one file that could go bad and you lose everything. You can set them to 1 gig chunks. So it makes 1 gig file, moves on, makes another 1 gig file, and they're all linked together,
mm-hmm.
which is really, it's nice to have that. Keeps keeps things a little simpler and less risk there.
Mm-hmm. And it's making a gigantic index of all the things it backs up and the dates. So
it has
its own internal database of, hey, I lost my report.txt file, you know. So the software knows, okay, I know where it is. I know all the versions mm-hmm. that I've backed up before. Mm-hmm. Which one do you want?
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's kind of nice.
Yeah. And you don't, you know, it has everything you need. You don't have to install any sort of SQL database or anything else to get this running. It takes care of it all itself.
Yeah.
One of the kind of confusing things, at least for me, was you don't set up the overwrite policy in the job where, like, you know, you set up, okay, I want to back up this user
mm-hmm.
and this user and these files. And the overwrite policy is actually part of the media set. So that's something to watch out for when you're setting it up. Mm-hmm. So if you want your backup data to only last a month, you set it up in your media set, which kind of makes sense, I guess.
But well, if you go back to the whole tape model, then mm-hmm. that would make sense because you're thinking about flagging certain tapes for
true,
how long they
true.
Stay around before you overwrite them.
That's a good
them.
Point. The other nice thing I realized after I started using that is you can use kind of the same overwrite policy, because it's in the media set, you can use that for several different jobs.
Right.
So that way, you know, you save yourself a little time. So.
Yeah.
But it does allow incremental, full backup, differential, whatever you please. It's a lot of detailed logging.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we haven't set up, but I'm excited about maybe doing, is you can have it email you reports. It has its own SMTP you can set up. You can set up an MAPI server, which lets you do SMS texting. So you can have it like text your phone if you wanted to. You can, if you have a modem in your server, you can have it page you. And even if for some reason you're still running Lotus Notes mail, you can use that. So as you can see, it's really robust. And the question is it hard to use? Yes and no.
Mm.
The reason it isn't hard is because they include lots of wizards for first-time users.
Right.
And that really saved me when setting it up the first few times, because you go through each step and it tells you, do you want to do this? It's like It's like doing your taxes with TaxCut or these other software packages.
Right.
It just takes you through step by step. And then when you're an expert, mm-hmm. you can just do it all yourself. And it lets you do that advanced option where you just scroll through all the options.
Yeah. And you and I have both used this throughout the years at several different versions. And I messed with the Unix version of this a while back. And I noticed that the backup exec now doesn't look really much at all like the old one.
Yeah, they've improved the interface a lot.
2001, 2002, mm-hmm. it doesn't look like that anymore, so.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not bad. Once you get used to it, it's pretty nice.
Yeah, it's really definitely, you can see that it's designed for, you know, a team of people in a large corporation, mm-hmm. but it does scale down well to just one or two guys trying to back up 50 or 100 users. You know, that's what seems to be really nice about it is it scales really well, mm-hmm. and the management software, I mean, I just can't talk enough about it because it just makes your job so much easier.
Yeah, and from one console, you can control multiple backup servers.
It's really,
you
know, that's pretty nice. Sweet. And if you're wondering, well, how am I going to know if I'm going to like this? They even provide a free trial, mm-hmm. full functionality, not 10 days, not 30 days, 60-day free trial.
Wow. That's worthwhile.
I mean,
check it out.
They know that you're going to love it. So we'll have a link in the show notes to the trial and go check it out for yourself. Let us know what you think.
And by the way, we're not paid by Symantec.
I wish we were.
Oh, yeah. I know. We'd be rolling in it.
Well, I think that's going to about wrap it up for this week. We will continue our two-part coverage of backup systems next week, banning hurricanes or tornadoes. And we will be covering the Unix side of things, which I'm looking forward to getting a little bit of that. Brian's going to school me on some command line goodness. So
we'll see.
Again, please go to our forums and go on there, post some news. If you see anything interesting or you think we're totally wrong about our suggestions, go there, tell us we're wrong, and we will talk about it in the next show. And if you have any feedback that you don't want to put in there, feel free to email us at feedback@angryadmins.com. And go to our website, angryadmins.com, and listen to our show, subscribe, look at some of the tools we have up there, and go to town.
That's it.
So until next time, I am Joe Baby.
And I'm Ryan Necessary.
Stay angry.